Killer Innovations Podcast for Sunday, August 14th, 2005, show number 23, brought to you from Washington, D.C. Welcome to the Killer Innovations Podcast. I'm your host, Phil McKinney. Before we get started, please keep in mind that the opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. Well, I'm just back from San Francisco and Los Angeles this week. Got 1 week back in D.C. and then turn around and head back to San Francisco. Thanks for the feedback. Still looking for emails describing how you apply innovation and creativity to your job and industries. It's interesting that I'm getting a lot of emails from a lot of people who kind of apologize for the fact that they're not in high tech. You know, in my day-to-day job, I am in the high technology field, working for one of the major computer manufacturers. But innovation can emerge anywhere. It's not constrained or confined to just being in high tech. You know, I've talked with one company or an individual that works for a company up in Wisconsin that's in the heavy manufacturing space. Some very interesting technologies. So again, looking for feedback on how you apply innovation and creativity to your job, your personal life, the charities you work with. Again, just trying to collect up stories about innovation in a variety of different industries. So again, drop me an email. And let me know how creativity and innovation is impacting your business. And I'll consolidate these and share them in an upcoming podcast. At the end of the podcast, I'm going to answer some questions that I've gotten in the last couple of weeks via email and Skype, along with I'll give you an update on the redesign of the Killer Innovations website and looking for your input. Also, please join in on the conversation at the Killer Innovations community site, or what you will know as the button on the site, which says KI Community. A lot of people are looking, albeit we're getting a lot more activity on that site. It's a great place for you to ask questions and post your opinions and respond. If you're actively involved in creativity and innovation, it's also your opportunity to help support some of the listeners in answering their questions about problems or challenges or how to get a creativity program going where they work. As always, you can reach me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can reach me on the feedback line at 703-636-4460 or always on Skype, Phil_McKinney. Today in segment one, we're going to talk about defining the problem. In past podcasts, we've talked about the difference between breakthrough and incremental innovations and where each of them play in the overall program and each having its role in achieving whatever your outcome is you or your management team's trying to drive to. However, sometimes we settle for incremental innovations when finding the breakthrough just seems too hard. We spend so much time in brainstorming sessions, and all we can come up with is basically that little incremental innovation. And that might be great, but what I have found is that the distance between an incremental innovation and a breakthrough can be as simple as redefining the problem. And to show you what I mean, I'm going to use a brief example. It's actually an example that was given to me or shared with me by some other individuals. I don't know who the original source on this example is, but whoever it is, I give them credit. It's not mine, but I think it's a great, great way to think about how do you redefine the problem. So, the task is management wants you to redesign a mouse pad. Now, in this example of a problem definition, the innovator, in this case you, can become very quickly fixed on the whole idea of a mouse pad and all the stereotypes that come with that term. And so the solutions that most people come up with when you have a defined stereotype around a specific single product We tend to think about it in the form that we know it as is the form of the stereotype. So in this case, you know, a flat-shaped surface that allows for the smooth mouse movement. So do you change the shape of the mouse pad? Do you change the graphic art on top of it? Do you put a wrist guard on it? You know, whatever the case might be. In this case, this is typically what management provides as a problem definition. Joe, Sally, I need for you to go design a new mouse pad. Now, if management team has really thought about it and really wants to try to encourage the innovators to come up with a new approach, you know, they could define the task as such as define a new environment in which to work a mouse. So it's not defining it that it has to be a mouse pad, but you want to use the mouse in some kind of an environment that is conducive to getting the job done. So in this case, opportunities emerge where the innovator can explore how the mouse is used and provide solutions or ideas that do not necessarily involve the mouse being flat on the table, sitting and using on top of a traditional mouse pad. Or in that case, maybe it doesn't even sit on the table at all. It could be a full three-dimensional, you rotate your wrist type of movement. Who knows? However, the innovator, in this case you, is still tied down by happening to design around a stereotypical mouse. If management team truly understands the value of innovation and creativity, and they really think about how to get the maximum amount of creativity around the specific problem, and they really want to unleash the team, then they may define the problem as, in this case, design of a new hands-based computer-controlled interface. It's not about a mouse pad, it's not about the mouse, but design of a new hands-based computer-controlled interface. In this example, the innovator is left with a maximum amount of freedom and can design a system which more or less redefines the environment between computer operator and machine. In this case, it'll draw upon the innovator's creativity, talent, to produce something genuinely new, something innovative. And it's amazing how just redefining this problem can really open it up. So again, in this example, kind of the base level definition of a problem, Joe, Sally, go design a new mouse pad. Or Joe, Sally, go design a new environment to work a mouse in. Or Joe, Sally, go design a new hands-based computer-controlled interface. In the above examples, what do you notice? The breakthrough in this case, and what you'll find, or at least what I have found in my own experience, designing and developing and be responsible for new products and ideas, is that in most cases, the real breakthrough comes from leaving the maximum flexibility when you are innovating where product meets product. In this case, a mouse pad and a mouse. If you focus just on one, the mouse pad, or you focus just on the mouse, you significantly constrain the source of ideas and the source of creativities that you have. So in this case, what you typically find is that when you combine or look at where products meet products, that's where you can have the maximum innovation. So how do you redefine the problem? Well, I've got at least some simple steps that I've used when I'm trying to brainstorm through being very careful on how I define the problem in order to get this maximum flexibility in the creativity and innovation phase. First, define where products meets products, where like things like a mouse pad and a mouse meet. And be specific on the current stereotype. Don't be afraid or shy away. It's a mouse pad, it's a mouse, however you want to define it. Take each stereotype and brainstorm as many ways to describe each respective product. So in this case, you know, mouse pad, maybe you describe it as a platform on which a mouse is operated, a flat surface, whatever the case might be. Then make random connections between the descriptions that you've developed for each. So in this case, a mouse pad and a mouse. So take random connections between the two descriptions that you've developed, this entire list, and just make these random connections. So in this case, handheld device, control, pointer, direct the computer, whatever the case might be. And then you look at these connections and then define the desired benefit. So if I took, for instance, handheld and control computer, how would I rewrite the problem statement? So in this case, you rewrite the problem statement and you describe the benefit. So it was a mouse pad and a mouse. That's something that I want to use as a handheld to control the computer. So hopefully that wasn't too confusing. And again, this is not something that that I got out of a book. This is just a process that I go through when I'm trying to look at how do I define the problems. Look where products meet products. Two, take a look at the stereotypes for each of those products and brainstorm different ways to describe them. Three, make random connections between these list of descriptions. And then four, look at those connections and then look at desired benefits and rewrite the problem statement. So, the question that I want to leave you with coming out of this segment one is what problem are you working on that could be helped if you redefined the problem? Okay, let's move on to segment two, weak signals. This last week, while I was in Los Angeles, I had an opportunity to visit the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena. If you're not familiar with the Art Center, it's one of the leading schools for design, creativity, covers a wide range of areas, scope. My visit was coordinated with what they call Super Thursday, which is where the students present their projects coming out of the term. And these projects covered a wide range of majors at the Arts Center, including product design, advertising, transportation design, photography, filmmaking, etc. And while I was there, they shared with me a study they did on a market segment that we've all known to know as tweens. And I found the research fascinating. And here I'm going to share with you just some of the findings as a weak signal source for your ideas. So what are the tweens? Tweens are anybody in the population that's between the age of 11 and 14. So these are kind of the preteens growing into the early teen years. Now it's interesting that the tweens have kind of a unique perspective on technology. They view kind of the instant messaging, SMS from your mobile phones as really what they refer to as their friend network. This is how they communicate, this is how they connect to their friends. And one of the ways they really show a lot of creativity is in the screen names. You know, it's kind of like vanity license plates. You know, people try to get very clever. And the same is for screen names. And many of the tweens have 3, 4, 5 screen names, each with their own separate network of friends, in order to maintain some wall of privacy. The tweens view email really as the adult network or old technology. They do not view email as anything new, hip, or anything that they typically do a lot with. They do everything on instant messaging, and email is kind of what mom and dad use. The cell phone basically is used, they refer to it as really their permission network, calling their parents, asking permission to go X, Y, Z, et cetera, et cetera. And they also will refer to it as the parent leash. Home, with regards to technology, they refer to the technology graveyard. Old technology in the house. They don't view their home as really being hip and cool or having the latest gadgets. Now, the other thing that's kind of unique with the tweens is what I would refer to as identifiers, how they describe what's kind of the social class of the tweens. So the identifiers, and this is a list that they've used themselves when during the research study of how they describe different groups of individuals within their school or within their social network. So one is, you know, the popular. So those, you know, hasn't changed since I was that age. You know, you got all the popular kids. You got the losers. You got what's called ballers, which is what I would refer to as jocks. The rockers, the gangsters, the skaters, the punkers, and emo, which I had to do a little bit of research to figure out what this one stood for. And what it was referred to is what they would call emotional. And so these are a group of kids who the other kids view or tag as being the emotionals, which is not, I guess, pretty much you could put everybody in 11 to 14 in that category, given the, you know, the hormones going on. And then the last category that they identify was what they call dark wave. And the dark wave, some of us may refer to as goth. It's the kids who are listening to the really dark kind of music. You know, I would refer to that again as goth. So again, you've got popular losers, ballers, rockers, gangsters, skaters, punkers, the emo, and dark waves. Some of the fantasies, you know, when they do want to fantasize about their future, one of the ways they do that is online window shopping. You know, they spend a lot of time going out on websites and looking at technology, cars, you know, things that are well outside their ability to purchase, and just fantasize about owning those kinds of things. The one thing with, particularly with the girls in this age category, is watching a lot of decorating shows. So Clean Sweep is a very popular show in this category, and some of the new home redesign, extreme makeover kind of shows are very popular. Entertainment. Most of these kids viewed they're watching TV only if they're bored. If there's no other option, then they'll watch TV. But TV's not a major source for them of entertainment. I mean, in my case, when I was this age, I was pretty much camped out in front of the TV because there really wasn't another option. But for these kids, they have lots of other options, whether that be sitting in their room, instant messaging their friends, or on the phone talking, or SMSing, or on the websites. And really, TV is only if I'm bored. And just think about all the impact that that's going to have on the new advertising models. Movies are important for them. Music is extremely important for them. Now about space. You know, how did these, how do the tweens define space around them? Well, one is they focus a lot of energy on what they would call branding of their room. So this is all the little knickknacks, what they collect, what they put on their shelves, painting on, you know, what color the walls are. And really what they're trying to do is look for something unique, something that differentiates them from everybody else, something that, you know, really defines it as their space. And for a lot of these kids, this is really the first time that they've been able to define their own space and have some kind of control over what goes up on the walls and what pictures are hung, etc. Virtual space for them is kind of a, they shy away from it only from the standpoint of only invited. This would be like chat rooms, et cetera, et cetera. They're very suspicious. Unless they're invited by somebody they know, they tend to shy away from that. Public space for them, the mall, the juice bar, and the coffee shop. Interesting that a lot of kids put coffee shop down, Starbucks, Caribou Coffee, whatever. And it's turning into being kind of the hip place for the tweens to meet their friends and to hang out. But one thing that is unique about the tweens is that they're constantly looking for a new space, something new that they can define that's for their market segment, someplace where the tweens can come together. It's clearly defined as their space, and that they can feel like you know, they've got something of their own from the standpoint of being hip and cool versus always being the ones that are trailing behind and following the high schoolers around. Private space for them, where it's kind of like a no trespassing sign, you know, where people cannot enter. One is their books, binders, sweatshirt. When they had an opportunity to list a variety of different clothes, the sweatshirt was identified as kind of being their private, something that they would not share. Water. And interestingly enough, keys. How do the tweens view time? Well, one is that they feel a lot of stress and a lot of pressure, which is homework, which really equates to them having no personal time. And it's interesting that a lot of the tweens do not have the expectation that they will do better than their parents. You know, when I was growing up as a baby boomer, you know, the expectation was that, you know, you would do better than your parents. You would get a better education. You would get a better job. You would make more money than your parents and therefore do better. For a lot of these tweens, they're looking at the success that their parents had, and many of them are checking out. They're not trying to achieve better than their parents. They're refocusing away from the bigger, better, more money to things that they're truly passionate about. And at this age, in the tween space, they're searching out where that is. But part of the stress is for those kids who do want to be successful, and because of what they view as the level of competition to get into the better colleges, etc., they are spending an enormous amount of time on their grades and other activities in order to try to win and be successful and attempt to do better. Tweens have their own time zones that they've defined, and it really falls into just four: before school, school, after school, and nighttime. So in their minds, everything really revolves around the time constraints or the time frames defined by their school activities. Locations they'd like to hang out at, or locations where they kind of view as where they have experiences. One is in the home. The second is in school. Third is sports, whether that be they participating in sports or they're watching sports. And then fourth was coffee shop. Again, coffee being the big thing. And I'm generally just, what does it say about society when we're getting 11, 14-year-old kids hooked on caffeine? So, given what we've just discussed, what unique characteristics could you combine to create a killer innovation aimed at the tween market? Moving on to segment three. To leverage on the previous segment talking about the tween market, this week's killer question is, how can I capitalize on pop culture in my product offerings? So again, this week's killer question is, how can I capitalize on pop culture in my product offerings? Some obvious choices include, you know, clothing, music, cars, movies, but there are some things that are not so obvious. And also keep in mind that the pop culture, not only do you need to be aware of pop culture to take advantage of it, but you also need to be aware of pop culture so that it doesn't come against you and impact your business. So what's one example? Let's take a look at food. We've seen the recent pop culture, and I don't know, some people in the diet industry might be a little upset with me calling it pop culture, but let's take a look at the Atkins diet. You know, in the case of the Atkins diet, it was, well, you had to stay away from carbs, right? So protein was good. Well, if you were Krispy Kreme and you kind of ignored the fad, which Krispy Kreme did, it had a huge impact on their business. I mean, Krispy Kreme went from being the place to have that kind of indulgent food experience to having significant impact on their revenue and growth numbers, now to the point where the CEO is being indicted for basically cooking the books. No pun intended there. So in this case, here's an example of an industry not being aware of a fad that was emerging and therefore caught themselves on the wrong side of that fad line. Another is travel. You know, businesses that are highly dependent on tourism has found that they can win big and also lose big depending on whatever the fad is, whether that fad is tanning a good thing to be doing, or is being out in the sun bad from a cancer perspective? The current social norms of gambling, for instance, with all of the poker games being played on TV, what the casinos are finding is that they literally will have waiting lines of 8, 9, and 10 hours for people to get to the poker tables in Las Vegas at the better known casinos, because people now have seen or have watched people playing poker on TV and want to participate in that kind of an activity. So there's these issues of fads that kind of emerge, in this case, tourism / gambling, that's being driven by what people are seeing on TV. So again, this week's killer question is, how can I capitalize on pop culture in my product offerings? And I'd also put a little twist on that. How can you avoid being victimized by pop culture in your product or service offerings? And before we wrap up, I just want to run through some quick listener questions. One of the questions that I got was with regards to a previous podcast where I was talking about my idea notebooks. As I shared in the past, I keep notebooks to write down all of my ideas, and I literally have Rubbermaid crates full of these things. In the last, oh, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, I've pretty much have gone exclusively with moleskins as my idea notebooks. I use the half-size graph paper version of the moleskins. And for me, I date each page as I'm writing out ideas. And if it's an idea that I clearly wanted to protect, then you need to have each page witnessed. And that means somebody has to read it, understand what the basic idea is, and then date and sign the bottom of each page. The general policy is that you should not leave blank pages. If you don't want to write on a page, meaning that, for instance, some people only like to write on the front of the page, they don't like to write on the back of the page because of ink bleed through or whatever, which is not a problem with the moleskins, which is one of the reasons why I use those notebooks. Then you should draw the line through the page with the same ink or pen used on the previous page, and then have the blank page witnessed and dated, especially if it precedes or follows an idea you want to protect. So again, this is the whole question. In this case, the reader was really asking about this blank page problem, meaning that if you want to leave a blank page in your notebook, your idea book, and you're going through and being rigorous about having each page witnessed so that you have a timestamp of when you created this invention, what do you do about blank pages? Well, the general policy is that you draw a diagonal line through the page and you go ahead and have that blank page dated and witnessed that it is blank. So that way, lawyers later on can't claim that you left pages blank in your idea notebook, and then after you saw somebody else's idea, you went back in and described it on a page that you had previously left blank. Now keep in mind that dating the idea, meaning dating and witnessing, is only really of value in countries that recognize what is called first to invent. And what that is meaning that you can claim an idea even if you don't file it for patents by proving you had the idea first. Now, first to invent countries are, you know, examples would be like the U.S. Most countries only recognize first to file, and there's actually a movement within the U.S. to move to a first to file, in some cases with conditional patents and others, which means everything rests on getting your idea down on paper and submitted for protection. As for me, I'm slowly moved away from heavy dating and witnessing, and instead have just gone directly to filing ideas for patents that I want to protect. Again, what I'm giving here is not legal advice. I'm not a lawyer. This is just the process that I go through. You should seek out proper legal counsel to ensure any of your ideas are protected. And also, just as a word of advice, for those of you who might be saying that, hey, I got this great idea, how do I get it commercialized? Avoid firms that promise to find companies who will license your patent or ideas in exchange for an upfront fee. I look at literally thousands of ideas, thousands of patents every year as part of my day-to-day job in the high-tech field, and I can tell you that I have never purchased an idea or a patent from any of these licensing companies. So avoid those firms. That's just my personal opinion. If you really do have a great idea and you do have a licensing firm that's one of the more credible ones that are out there in the industry, then they should be excited about your idea such that you negotiate a split on revenue received, not an upfront fee. Second question, in a previous podcast, I mentioned equipment that I use to record the podcast, especially when I'm mobile. One item I mentioned was an earpiece microphone that I actually received as a prototype from Nicholas and the management team at Skype. This piece comes in very handy when I'm on the road and recording. This particular device was a prototype at the time when I got it from Skype, and one listener emailed asking if the earpiece and microphone were commercially available. Well, the answer is not that I know, and I'll try to remember to ask the Skype team the next time I stop by their offices in London and see if that has gone commercial. It is a very handy device, and it looks a lot like what you would see with a traditional over-the-ear microphone kind of device that you would have with a cell phone, but this one's unique for Skype. So also, before wrapping up, I wanted to share with you some information about the Killer Innovation site redesign. I've gotten a lot of comments about the current site, and believe me, I know all of its problems. And the fact that it has really a look and feel, and the fact that the banner doesn't even say Killer Innovations. The site redesign is actively underway. We've contracted with somebody to help build the site. Once I have a draft version ready for review, I'll post a link in the community site under the feedback category and ask for your thoughts and comments. Some new features on the site based on emails and feedback are, one will be a directory of books and tools, everything that I use. I get a lot of questions about certain books. You know, am I familiar with it? Do I know this? The use of card decks as a source of generating ideas, etc. So I'm actually creating an entire list of the books and tools that I use regularly in my innovation workshops. That way you can see what I'm using. It'll also be an opportunity for you to comment on those. Secondly is events and schedules. I get a lot of emails from people who maybe have listened to the podcast a little late and had learned that I was just in their area. So for instance, I was just in Los Angeles, and one of the listeners actually is based in Los Angeles, but by the time they listened to the podcast and heard that I was in LA, it was too late for us to do a meetup. So I'm posting events and schedules so that you know where I'm going to be. And my objective here is not to boast that I'm, you know, at these locations. My objective here is for us to facilitate a means to meet up. It was such a great experience to meet with some of the listeners at Supercom in Chicago a couple months back that I really want to try to reach out and have an opportunity to meet with as many of you as possible as I travel around the world. So stay tuned. That will have a much longer view as to where I'm going to be. And then if I happen to be in your area, then let's set up a meetup, maybe with just ourselves or maybe a bunch of listeners. For instance, Australia is turning out to be the second largest contingent of listeners to this podcast, or coming behind the U.S. It is Australia, with U.K. being number three. So needless to say, I'm going to make a special effort to get down to Australia in order to visit with the listeners that are down there. Third, I'm also putting in an entire list of all the RSS and links, all the RSS news feeds that I read, you know, regularly. I'll also put those up as OPML format so that you can download them and load them directly into your news feeders if you want to read the same things that I'm reading, or if I've got something in my news read that's a little bit, you know, something that maybe you haven't come across. And then also, we're going to do a better job of integrating in the community site so we can get more listener participation. So give me some thoughts. If there are other things or features that you would like to see in the website to make it easier for you to find resources around innovation and creativity, let me know. And with that, thanks for listening. Please keep the feedback coming. The email volume this last week was great. A lot of people submitting emails about, you know, innovation and the role of innovation and creativity in their day-to-day jobs. I really do appreciate that. And so again, please keep the feedback coming. You can reach me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. Feedback line is 703-636-4460. And you can Skype me at phil_mckinney. If you haven't voted, please visit the killerinnovations.com site and click on the Podcast Alley button on the upper right-hand side, and then click on the Vote Now. Votes and comments on Podcast Alley are the easiest way to say thanks for the time and effort that goes into researching and producing your favorite podcast. So you should go out to Podcast Alley and make sure you vote for all your podcasts. That way, the producers and the people who are involved in creating those know that you're listening and that you're getting value from their efforts. Please join in on the conversation about creativity, innovation, ideas, and weak signals by visiting the killerinnovations.com site and clicking on the KI community button. Participate. Many of you may be thinking that you're listening to this on your iPod or MP3 player, and that's the limit of value that you can get from just from the podcast. But what we're doing is we're trying to build a community, build an interaction between the listeners, which gives you just as much, or if not more, value than just the podcast by itself. So join in. The Killer Innovations Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Visit techpodcast.com to discover the best in technology podcasts. And you should go off and take a listen to it. Albeit the Tech Podcast Network is primarily for technology, there are some great podcasts that are more science and technology. For instance, Craig Boyd's podcast, which is the BBC Technology. If you don't listen to that one, albeit it is about technology, but you know, Craig covers such a wide range of topics. That's one podcast that I am just adamant about listening to it as soon as Craig posts his new show. So again, stay subscribed. Get others to subscribe. Feel free to send links to the podcast, whatever the case might be. So again, stay subscribed. Get others to subscribe. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.